My guest today, Hannes Wackerbart, leads the Inception NGO team. Based in Germany and working primarily in Uganda, Inception is an NGO that combines education, technology, and reforestation to build a better climate and future. His vision for the Inception mission and his approach to teaming and leadership challenges traditional ideas about hierarchy and productivity. Hannes and Inception are models for building an organization which achieves impressive results and has fun doing it. And now I give you Hannes Wackerbart. Hannes Wackerbart, welcome to the Nonprofiteers Podcast. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me today.
Okay. It's lovely to have you, and thank you for accepting the invitation. Let's start by talking a little bit about the vision and mission of Inception Green.
The team in general put a lot of effort into that. So vision, mission, values, yeah, what type of NGO we want to build, actually. It took us quite a while, I think even more than 1 year, to do it properly. And we decided for a short-term and a long-term vision. Because, of course, we're just starting up. We're an NGO that is like a startup, and we have to think short-term, what we really do, but, of course, also long-term, what we want to do on the long run. So the short-term vision is climate education as accelerator for reforestating communities in greening Uganda, while on the long run, we would like to contribute to the worldwide planet rescue mission by creating thriving ecosystems for plants, animals, and humans. And we basically try to fulfill this vision with our mission. We thrive on enable environmental leaders, like in Uganda, to educate schools and communities about climate change, empowering them with training on how to grow and plant trees, meaning the teachers, the community leaders, for positive climate impact and community development.
It's a beautiful vision and mission, because those can be very different, right?
Absolutely, but I think it just makes sense, because what we're doing now is education and planting trees. But of course, we want to do more planting trees. And at the end of the day, if you create a habitat, you have plants, and then humans can benefit in forms of fruits. So we only plant fruit trees in order that they can't be chopped down. I mean, they can be chopped down, but they won't do it because they see the benefit from the tree. And lastly, of course, if you have a habitat of trees, animals will come.
I missed that, the fruit tree thing. That's very smart. So you're working in Uganda. How did you pick Uganda, or how did you get started in Uganda?
Sure, absolutely. I started my journey 4 years back in Uganda with the organization 264 Education. My flatmate was involved as president in the organization, and I got part in building up the CRM. It was Salesforce at that time. And then I did my first building project in Uganda, in Bale. And that was really inspiring. And then I thought, okay, I want to do that as well. And the next year I went back to actually scout a new partner for a new school. And yeah, so then I had 2 visits in Uganda. I somehow understood how to scout a partner. Also, the new school with a new partner was basically in process building up. Then I quit my job, decided to found myself, and was lucky that it went well. And then before my next visit in Uganda to check on the school, I actually said, okay, now is the time. And you don't have any excuses anymore, because since ever I wanted to really do something for the environment, because I think that's absolutely crucial and key where you should put your focus in, because it doesn't help in Africa if you build schools where nobody will go in 20 years because it's too hot. So I think the more pressing issue is environment and climate. And yeah, as I had basically all the knowledge in place, I researched a lot, and I found one individual which was basically doing the tree planting in schools. And then on my third visit, I had a coffee with him, and then I decided to stay for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Wow. It's a great story. And you're based in Germany.
Yeah. Germany, Berlin.
And is your team, I know you have partnerships in Uganda. Are they mostly in Germany also?
So basically, you have to separate. So we have Inception as an organization. We are based in Germany, and our team members are based all around Germany.
Okay.
So everybody works in his or her free time, you can say. And then in Uganda, we have the Climate and School Street Project, which is the project from that individual, where we have six persons in Jinja. And currently we are ramping up Mbale as a new climate hub, where we have two people at the moment.
Tell me a little bit about the team and the culture that you wanted to cultivate. You mentioned that early on when you first started talking about vision and mission. And I think that's terribly important. I'm glad you mentioned it because, you know, to quote Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. You have to have a strong culture in order to do this work and do it well. Could you say a little bit about your culture?
Absolutely. So I think at the beginning, I really needed to learn that it goes slower than I want, because everybody works with free time besides the normal job. So that was hard, but I figured that it's much more important that everybody has fun. So you have to create an environment where it's fun to work with. You have great visions, but you actually really bring the PS onto the street. And most importantly, getting rid of bad conscience. We have that a lot still. I'm actually fighting with all people in the NGO, and I'm always telling them, don't apologize. It's okay. Because when you think about, you have a stressful job, you are a consultant, whatever, anyways, working 55, 60 hours or even more, then something like an NGO, where you also want to work and you actually want it, but you don't find the time, it creates stress. It creates a bad conscience. And I'm actually still in the process of taking that away from the people, that it's okay. There are months where it's simply not possible, and there will be months where you can do more, and that this is okay, and that we are all here to do a positive impact for the world, for Uganda. And we only can do that on the long run if it's fun and we like it. Because as soon as it's stress or it's bad feelings and they are getting connected to the NGO, it won't help us on the long run.
Yeah, that's a great thing to be communicating as a leader, because guilt and shame are operative no matter where you are, right? Like, you can be doing the most beneficial job you could possibly do to the planet and other people and still feel guilt and shame because you're not doing enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You always think you don't do enough. I think we don't really have hierarchies. So if you have an idea and you want to do it and it makes sense, let's go. And everybody can basically bring ideas. And yeah, I would say, like a normal startup where you don't have any hierarchies, really direct communication. Germans are really direct. So no hard feelings, honesty, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that model, but there are questions about how you make decisions. So what is your decision-making model? Like, let's say that the team gets together and there's some conflict or disagreement on how to move things forward. How does that get resolved?
I experienced that in other NGOs where I worked. Mm. It was really tough. Mostly, I think, just egos fighting. And I can happily say that until now, we haven't had that in our organization. So it's really, I think there are not so many tough decisions to make. And if we have tough decisions, then actually we do an extra call for it, say, hey, that's basically the case. I would propose that. What do you think? And most of the time it's then adjusting a bit into some direction. But I think it's important that everybody has a saying and everybody can raise his or her voice.
Yeah. Autocracy can be very efficient, but it's not good for the decisions. You see what I'm saying? Like, you need everyone's input to make great decisions. That's what you have a team for, right?
Especially when they're working voluntarily, right? Because, you know, they won't do in the future if they don't agree.
So what are some of the things that differentiate Inception Green? I have some ideas about that, but I'd rather hear them from you.
Sure. I think firstly, we are kind of a novum, so combining education and climate impact. So I never saw that. I'm pretty sure one or two other NGOs in the world will be there that are doing mm-hmm. exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Then the next thing is that we don't pay any team members in Germany. So Inception mm-hmm. is really voluntarily. Of course, our team members in Uganda, they are Ugandans, they get paid. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just a marketing machine, you could say, in mm-hmm. Germany that is basically fundraising the money and directly piping it into the project. So we don't have overhead costs. The only overhead costs we have are finance processing fees. And software is basically a donation from a company. So meaning the money we get goes directly to Uganda. And maybe, I mean, if you compare, big NGOs have overhead costs of 33% maybe. So that's a lot, actually.
Oh, sure, because they're employing a lot of people.
I mean, the bigger a ship gets, the more inefficient it gets, of course.
Yeah.
And then a lot of things doesn't really make sense. I also like, I mean, that approach is also influenced a bit from 264 Education, where I've been before. I like that basically the attitude, no, we don't send you a letter how the kid is doing, because the letter costs €1. It doesn't make sense. Or 2 euros. The 2 euros are much better applied in the project, and you get an email mm-hmm. from us.
Yeah.
So just applying common sense and efficiency.
No, I was just going to say, it actually makes sense to set expectations with donors like that.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think we talked about no hierarchies and mm-hmm. Maximum transparency. So we have one knowledge database, Notion, and everybody can see everything.
Yeah.
And I would be open also to share it with the world. This, yeah.
Wow. So those are big differentiators. Total transparency, 100% volunteer workforce, combining climate and education in a very direct way. You're directly doing it and you're planting trees. That's fantastic. So over the course of since the start of Inception Green, what have been some of the tough periods for you, the challenging periods? You know, what were the difficult things that you had to get past?
So I think founding actually was incredibly tough, because at the beginning in Germany, you have to get 7 people together to found an NGO.
Okay.
So you have to get 7 people, yeah. And my co-founder, she helping me, but not intrinsically for the cause, which was a problem,
right.
Of
yeah.
course, on the long run. So that was one issue, but even harder was everything was 100% clear in my mind, how to build everything, which is still not yet built totally. And transferring that to all the people which are joining is super hard, because you tell them and you think, okay, they got it, but they can't really get it emotionally, everything, because mm-hmm. they haven't seen it, they haven't been there. This understanding that you actually need to do so much more sessions and talk about the issue with them, or not the issue in general, the project, I should have done this more. And due to that, of course, it's moving slow, because people don't have the same clarity as you. So patience was the learning out of that. And that was a tough time. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting. Patience is one of the things that, you know, one of the other nonprofit leaders that I interviewed said was one of her top 3 recommendations to people who are working nonprofits or NGOs. You have to be patient and look at the, you know, look at the long arc of your work. And for a lot of reasons, but it's a tribute to you that, you know, you now have an organization with a strong culture, non-hierarchical, where good decisions are being made.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it sounds like that's one of the things as a course correction was just to communicate more.
Yes, and I think the real game changer then was October, basically. So we founded it in end of December, and in October we had the first on-site in Uganda with the team members, and mm-hmm. they saw it. We did create video material, everything. So I think after that, it was clear. Ah, okay, this is actually what we're doing. They got emotionally involved into the project. And of course, such a visit also gives you a high as an organization for the next 2 months, because people are just like, was an amazing experience, let's do it. So it's always October we go there, we always get into the high. And then actually after Christmas, Jan, Feb, you're in the low because people need to recharge and have some free time again.
Yeah. So your team visits Uganda annually then, sounds like.
Yes, always in October for smart. 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's super smart. There's, and you know, people that are back office as well. I've mentioned this in other interviews, but when I was the CIO, CTO, at Mercy Corps, and I just got started, the CEO immediately sent me to Ethiopia. I hadn't been there for a couple of days, and he immediately sent me to Ethiopia because I think he knew it would be motivating and fascinating and engaging and, you know, and help with my own energy level.
Absolutely. You always have that topic about, should you waste the money on the flight or should you rather donate it? From an altruistic standpoint, of course, it's clear, but I think what maybe even more important than the donation is that you've been there, that you've been emotionally involved, that you understand what's really happening there, that it's not you donate once, but you have an experience for your lifetime and you're involved much longer. So I think it's actually super important to go and to see it for yourself.
I couldn't agree more. And as the director, you can only communicate so much. It's good to have beneficiaries and people in the field communicating too, right?
We're just ramping up volunteering now at the moment.
Oh, is that right? Tell me about that. Tell me about how you engage. How do you recruit your volunteers? Because that's another unusual aspect of your organization, that it's 100% volunteer force.
Ah, and which volunteers do you mean? Sorry, to make it clear. So, of course, every member of Inception is a volunteer because he basically donates the time spent on the project. But I just talked about volunteering for everybody from around the world in the project in Uganda.
Let's talk about those volunteers, the volunteers that are not in Germany, the kind of non-staff, the program volunteers.
Yeah. So I think volunteer work, it's called, where you have all those projects and you basically can go there, sleep for free, and you volunteer for 5-6 hours in the project. And yeah, so I think we got verified finally. We're just ramping up the process internally. We already have the first volunteers, so actually it's running faster as we are as an organization already, but that's fine. And then the classic stuff, I mean, we have a lot of material about Uganda, about things you should know if when you go there, as doing a survey afterwards, getting more in touch with them so that we can actually also get a third view on the project, and we can also react. Maybe they tell us something we didn't see before, or they have great ideas for new projects and they want to donate money.
Yeah. How do you do your fundraising?
Interesting. So it's a mix out of recurring donations, which are B2C. This is a small amount. And then we had one big Christmas fundraiser this year for the new hub in Mbale. It was one other run, like a student run, actually, where I think they collected 5,000, close to 5,000. Will happen this year again. Then we kick off carbon offsetting, voluntary carbon offsetting, you could say. There they are. Where we basically also try to get the first funds in, planting trees and getting donations for that. And we just ramped up a fundraising team of four people, where we now basically start to applying for all foundations in Germany that are there, which operates outside of Europe, which is actually not so common, to be honest. So we struggle to find proper foundations that really want to do something in climate and in education in Africa.
Yeah. And so you're, it sounds like your donor pool is pretty diverse. So you have individual donors, you get grants. Do you have any big donors that are, you know, you rely on for big donations?
I wouldn't say so. I have a transparency page on, it's still in German. I need to translate it. I was a night shift, which we needed the transparency page for one pitch for our foundation. So I have to translate it. You can read everything there. So I think you even have to name companies or persons if they gave you more than 10% in a year. And I think it's one company. It was 18,000 in the first year and it was 9 months. And they gave 3 for Christmas. It's actually a client of the agency of mine.
I
And
see.
they just heard that we do a Christmas fundraiser and then they donated.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people that end up doing nonprofit work, I won't say a lot, but I've met quite a few that started in marketing.
I mean, it is kind of marketing, right? If we talk about, especially what we do now with a developing country like Uganda, you have a marketing machine on the front. Like you need a nice website, you need a nice design, you need a nice tone of voice. So we really worked a lot on our communication guidelines and principles. A lot, a lot. Because I was always, I don't care. I want bold communication. I don't care if 50% thinks what's wrong with those guys, which words are they using? That's too aggressive. I think now it's a bit less bullish, but I like still like the tone of voice. And yeah, so I think it's a lot of marketing at the end.
Yeah, I love the tone of your website. It's engaging, it's not stodgy, it's informal, it's everyday language. I think that appeals to more people in the modern world than the older ways.
Yeah, sure. Shatta is doing all the communications. Yeah, she did a great job pulling me back when I was too boldish. Yeah.
So, what are the principles that you bring to bear? You've already suggested some of them. It feels like democratic values and transparency are kind of infused into the culture. But what are some of the other principles that you bring to bear in your work, every day? It could be the finance work, could be program work. What are leadership principles that you think are very critical for you and for the organization?
Authenticity is the most important thing. I heard even like it's right the highest frequency of all. So if you're really authentic, everybody will feel it, your team will feel it, and you will win a lot, especially on the long run. Maybe not on the short, but on the long. I think we're not doing it so much in the NGO. I have to pay better attention, but I think what's really important is feedback. And normally you say 5 times good feedback, 1 time criticism. So it is important to say thank you or to say great job, guys. Especially the marketing team gets it a lot, social media team, because they really do kick ass reels. I love it. It's incredible what quality they have. We're actually planning to hire some more videographers to really shoot them out like a machine. I think it's important that you feel valued. Your work feels valued.
I don't know if you knew it, but authentic leadership is its own leadership model these days. There are different models of leadership: authoritative leadership, servant leadership, affiliative leadership, and there's authentic leadership. And so authenticity is big. What does that mean to you? What does being authentic mean to you?
Interesting. So I think my personality type, I'm a debater, 16 personalities, you get what you see. So I speak always super direct, super straight, super honest. In the business context, it's incredibly good and it did great for me. But I think still sometimes people can't take honesty. So in the business context, you always need to give them a bit of guidance and say, hey, I'm not here to so personal. I just want to help you and bring you to the next level when I'm that direct. But I think authenticity means also to be direct and to sometimes, yeah, not hurt people, but yeah, be direct and say, hey, that's not okay. But in a nice way.
I think that's a false dualism. The idea that you can't be you can't be direct without being offensive. You know, I would argue that, you know, being direct in the best way, direct is the content and the form, right? So if you're rude and you're direct, that's not helpful. But if you're compassionate and direct, that's the best possible way to be, you know?
I think so, and I hope so.
Yeah. So, you know, and built into that is honesty and a bunch of virtues. What are some of the you know, every leader has leaderships, has strengths and weaknesses. What are the weaknesses that you feel that you have and the strengths that you feel that you have so that you shore up with other members of the team, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I always think it will go faster than it is. It's always, everything is fast, of course.
I'm laughing because you mentioned patience earlier, and that's a type A, you know, that's pretty common, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next thing is, which I slowly, or I think I have it under control now, but I always have ideas, and then basically there is a pit that you start with new ideas, but you don't finish the old ones. That is super dangerous for me. But I'm really aware of that because, yeah, I mean, you can't really progress if you don't finish something up. I think I'm extremely strong in structuring stuff, setting up processes. On the other hand, I hate it to follow those processes, even my own, because so it's a big weakness of mine that, yeah, kind of, how do you say, like, cages me, processes, following rules, following authority is not really my thing.
Interesting. When I was in software, in the private sector and nonprofit sector, and working with people who wrote a lot of code, you know, coders, and I figured out there were two kinds of coders. There were the creators and there were the polishers. Creators would, as soon as they saw the light at the end of the tunnel, as soon as their design was finished and they knew it could be implemented, they wanted to move on to something else. And the polishers would fix software bugs, even though no customer would ever see them. You know, they just wanted the code to be perfect, you know? So it sounds like there's a little bit of that. A lot of leaders like the vision stuff and they like the creation part and they like moving on to the next thing, but can shore up that issue with people on your team that like working in the details and that enjoy the process, right?
Absolutely. I mean, actually, one of my, how you say, co-president, is also my business partner, and he's exactly the counterpart. So one other weakness of mine is I'm just fast also in doing stuff. And I can do it really fast, but I'm not paying attention to details. And if he finishes it up, he of course will find them and make it perfect. So I think it's always important to find the people which love what you hate. Sounds absolutely crazy, but I think that's what you have to find.
No, I think that's a basic tenet of good leadership. You know, you want your entire approach to be comprehensive. You want to cover all the bases, and one person just can't do that. It's impossible. You know. Even if you have a ton of strengths and very few weaknesses as a leader, there's still knowledge gaps. So you need those people.
Absolutely. The right people, I figure. They need to have ownership, responsibility. And then I think also you need the right mix out of creators, but also out of operators. Because if you just have creators, it will be hard to finish something up and vice versa.
What are your... So right now, what are the biggest challenges that you're facing down in moving forward?
In general, we have to separate it, like challenges in Germany and I would say challenges in Uganda. Mm-hmm. Challenges in Uganda is basically ramping up Mbale. So I think we did a great job now since the beginning of the year. We have now 2 employees. It's really running. It's actually running crazy good. So we will plan the streets of Mbale because the sustainability officer of Mbale is a big fan of our project. We had the chance to speak in front of all head teachers in Mbale. So we have a big network already, but this was one challenge. I think now the next big challenge is we need to diversify, and we tried already with community planting. So not just going to schools, but also communities. Was tough because it was really political at the beginning. Now we have a new approach, mm-hmm. and it seems to work. And it's so important because the first time we go to a school, we can plant a lot of trees. But the second time, when we do the next class, 1 year after, there's not so much space anymore for planting trees. Means our impact is decreasing. Mm-hmm. This is why now we actively need to go into communities in order to ensure that our impact stays somehow stable in form of trees, of course. Yes, and when it comes to Germany, so inception, I think it's raising funds. So all in all, it looks good that we are safe until the end of the year already. But of course, we have big visions. We want to start with fruit tree gardens where we buy some hectares, planting a lot of fruit trees, maybe also close to a national reserve where animals can immediately pass after some years. And secondly is ramping up the teams. So we have no hierarchies, but still I would like to establish a new management level. Mm-hmm. Basically all people which have been in the NGO for 2 years now, that they get their own team. Because it's voluntary work, we need more people in order to achieve more. And mm-hmm. This is the biggest challenge, to find the right people that really have the intrinsic motivation to work, we always say 10 hours a month, mm-hmm. in the department, be it marketing, operations, tech, whatever. We are 13, 14 now, and I really mm-hmm. would like to ramp it up to 2022 by end of this year. And this is the biggest challenge, I guess.
Yeah. And that's a good step to kind of experiment a little bit with scale.
Yes. So I thought a lot, but I really figured, let's take the marketing team from us. So I think every company would envy our marketing team. It's incredible. We have a copywriter, we have a UX designer and who actually builds the website. We have another designer I worked years with. Then we have, how would you name him? He's making strategies also for Reels, but he actually is also a creator and he mm-hmm. can cut the videos as well. So we have an incredible team, but still they can't produce the output we would need, the high quality mm-hmm. output we would need. They can do it for 1 or 2 months, but not longer. And I think, if you can get 3-4 people more that really want to move something and they just cut 2 videos a month or 1, would be amazing. And then you really at the point where you say, okay, that department delivers continuously top-notch content. This is why I think it's so important to get the scaling, which is super difficult because you have to protect your core, who you are, the values, etc. pp. It has to fit. So, and also you have to onboard them in less time because we all work not so much because it's a side project.
Sure.
And I think that's a challenge, but I hope we can achieve it.
Do you have volunteers doing HR related stuff for you, like recruiting?
Nope, not yet.
That, That might be a to think about.
Absolutely. So I think we will trial it now with the videographers. So I would love to get three or four, which dedicate one reel a month. And we're currently basically writing down the onboarding and the process because you have videographers which can only cut. Some can really think about the storyline and do everything. We will see. Then we all do LinkedIn posts and we will see what comes back. And if not, I get the HR person.
And by the way, let me put a plug in for your website. It's gorgeous. So anyone who's watching or listening, inception.green, go there and look at what a gorgeous, effective website should look like and behave like. It's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. It goes directly to the marketing team. Amazing job.
Yeah. If you had to name one or two things or three things that give you the greatest satisfaction in day-to-day work, what would they be?
In day-to-day work, it's hard. I think I have one, two, three maybe in my mind. I think in Uganda, when I've been there, the greatest satisfaction I got was, so you have to envision we have 16 members there, and of course one or two, they are not the presenting guys. Mm-hmm. And when we were driving to a school, I was like, can he make it? Because he's really calm and really shy. When he was standing in front of the class, he did it perfectly from A to Z. And in my eyes, he was like more, he's also called a tree officer and not a climate education officer. Seeing that after 1 year, even the tree officers can actually do the full climate session with excellence. This was really, I was so happy to see that. So I think this, secondly, figuring, and I think sometimes it's really hard as somebody who envisions something that you stop and you look back, it's not an idea anymore. So it's actually really happening every day. And this is absolutely beautiful. And you can't pay with money for that. Sadly, I think it's the calls. So sometimes when I go into the calls and I see all the faces, I'm just happy because somehow we managed to bring all this crazy bunch of people which are crazy enough to dedicate their time to that cause.
Well, it must be very satisfying to run a volunteer workforce and have that kind of engagement.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to the offsite when they are coming to Berlin. I think in June, July will be fun.
Yeah. So this is a question I ask every nonprofit leader. What three things would you tell? What are the biggest learnings that you've distilled from your experience? What would you pass on to someone else who's running an NGO or a nonprofit? What are three things you would pass on?
I think at the end of the day, you are a founder. If you found a company or an NGO, it's similar. Keep going. Keep going. It's incredible hard at the beginning because most of the people won't get what, as I told before, even the people which want to do it with you maybe don't 100% already get what you mean because it's mostly in your head. So keep going. Take a break. If you can't see the project, take a break for two weeks, 1 month, whatever, and then get back to it because it's worth it at the end.
Right. Yeah.
Consistency, I think. Then secondly, I think we had it before as well, the right people.
Yeah.
It's extremely important that you find the right people which are intrinsically motivated for the cause. And those people need to be able to take ownership and responsibility for the department. I still struggle to, I still have some departments which are not properly set up. And this is mainly because I didn't find yet the right person which is actually taking ownership 100% and driving it into the right direction. So I think if you want to build something great, you need an HR. So I think the faster you find those people, the faster you will be. I think I'm also still doing my baby steps here. And lastly, be an expert in what you do. And if you don't have the knowledge, get the knowledge, especially if you work in developing countries. So we had it in our first get to know call. If you work in developing countries, you need to know every unit economic there. It's absolutely crucial. If you don't know the unit economics, you will pay much too much.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So those are great. Persistence, focus on getting the right people on board, and know your work, particularly the country if you're working in a developing country. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Hannes, it's been so much fun interviewing you.
Thank you. Likewise. I really enjoyed it.
Is there anywhere else that people should go to plug in? You know, let's say someone's interested in your climate work or being a donor. We can send them to the website, and I will in the article in both the in this podcast, inception.green. Any other way that people could plug in to your work?
I think three ways, of course, donation. Secondly, get involved. I mean, write me a message. As you heard, I really want to grow the team. Yeah. If you want to dedicate 10 hours a month, you're welcome. And lastly, go there. Go there, help, and get emotionally involved.
Yeah. I happen, as an aside, I happen to know some videographers, so I may send some folks your way who are very good. And they, the ones that I know do the whole thing from A to Z.
Amazing.
They do the filming, editing, everything. They know all about it. So
we have a lot of content already. So
yeah,
but they are all, of course, invited to come to Uganda to film.
Yeah. Great. Take care. Best of luck to Inception, and we will stay in touch.
Thank you. Have a great night.